From the IT Lab Studios, my name is Rodrigo Leal.
And my name is Kate Golden, and you are listening to the iSchool Weekly Update. Here's what's going on for the week of December 4th, 2017.
Tuesday, December 5th. The Career Development Office is having the final brown bag session of the fall semester from noon to 1 p.m. in UTA 1.208, entitled Show Me the Money, Negotiation Outside the Comfort Zone. Come to this session to learn more about salary negotiations and how you can ensure you are getting appropriate payment for your work. Thursday, December 7th. The last in the Advocacy and Allyship Training Series is coming up on December 7th from 3 to 5 p.m. in UTA 5.522. These trainings are open to students, faculty, and staff, and will promote awareness and skills for working with and advocating for people from vulnerable communities. The affirming LGBTQIA+ people trainings are provided by the Gender and Sexuality Center. This is the second in a two-part training. You don't need to have completed the first training to attend, but you will only be able to sign the pledge and receive an allyship card if you have attended both. For more information or to RSVP, email saautx@gmail.com or go to the SAAUT Facebook page. Friday, December 8th. The Fall Capstone Poster Session is happening here in the UTA building. Graduating students will be presenting their final projects for all to see. Come check it out. Monday, December 11th. Come to the Talker Lounge from 5 to 7 p.m. for the iSchool End of Semester Party. You've earned it. If you have an event that you would like to share with members of the iSchool community, email us at iSchoolWeeklyUpdate@gmail.com with a short description. We are more than happy to share them with our listeners. My name is Elizabeth Fletcher, and this has been your weekly update.
Up next is the final part of a three-part series of interviews we had with Adjunct Professor Lance Hayden, entitled Taking Control of Your Privacy and Security in an Increasingly Intrusive World. Today, Kate and Lance talk about passwords and wrap up the conversation.
For our last segment, we are going to dive more deeply into passwords, and we did touch on that a little bit before. So to start off, what makes a good password?
You know, it's timely that you're asking this, because for the past 10 plus years, we have had drilled into us what it takes to make a good password. It has to be long. It has to be complex. It has to have numbers and special characters and all these different mixes of things. It can't be real words. You have to change it all the time. You have to have different passwords for every single thing that you use. What that has done is created an environment where the running joke is people picking really great passwords that are impossible to remember and then writing them down on sticky notes and sticking them to the bottom of their computer or putting them in the drawer next to the computer and essentially obviating all the protections. Again, I talked in the last segment about, you know, I get hives when I see people that have, all these updates they haven't updated on their phone. The other thing that gives me hives is I've seen tons of relatives. They're usually older relatives, but I had one just the other week. A relative of mine was very, very excited about how secure she was because she kept all of her passwords in a file on her phone. And I was like, do you have the phone password protected? Well, no, that's hard. I forget it all the time. And I'm like, you're trying to give me hives. I mean, we don't really understand. But this is not necessarily our fault, because the guidance has had all of these rules we're supposed to follow. Well, in the last month, 2 months tops, they've been working on it for a while, but where those guidelines came out of about 10 years ago, plus, I think it was 2003, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, sets a lot of policies and standards for the government, but then they tend to trickle out to industry and everybody else. And so NIST had developed these password rules. And a guy named Bill Burr in specifically had helped write those up. And just recently, you know, he came back. They've redone all of them. There's a special publication, and NIST puts out all these security special publications. But this one in particular is special publication 863.3, and it's digital identity guidelines. And in this, they've revisited what makes a good password. Bill Burr actually made a mea culpa that essentially said, everything that I told you to do 10 years ago, forget about it. That's not right. To do a good password, length is the single greatest factor. The longer the password is, the better it is. Whether or not it has exclamation points and spaces and readable words and everything else, if you string together, you know, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. Now, that's actually not a good password for reasons I'll go into, but that kind of length, that kind of phrase, a phrase for me, something more along the lines of, I thought my podcast at the iSchool went really, really well because I'm a security god. That would be an unbelievably good password, even if it was all lowercase with no spaces in it, because it is really long. And it's also fairly hard to guess in what's called a dictionary attack. Dictionary attacks were something, this is the reason if your workplace or whenever you try and pick a good password, if it tells you, ooh, that word's in a dictionary, you can't use it in your password. That's because one of the ways to attack passwords and crack them is to run dictionaries at them. And it's probably beyond the scope of this podcast to talk about how passwords get cracked. But bottom line is, you can crack them by running lots of words in dictionaries at them. But the thing about it is, that's like if you usually have a one or two word, you know, if you're using just a small subset of these words. What you can also do, though, is if I use the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog, that's going to be, instead of a dictionary word, that's a very commonly known phrase. I'm very likely to put that into a list of known phrases. I might also put to be or not to be. That is the question. Something like that. Things that there's still this element of, you don't want stuff that's well known in literature or well known, anything where it's been published somewhere where someone can throw it in. But random stuff like Lance eats blueberries in the morning whenever he watches Fox News, that is not something that you're going to be able to go and find that anywhere. And so that makes it a really good password because it's super long and it's fairly random and it's pretty complex. And so that's really where we're going today, is if you want to pick an excellent password, pick an easily remembered long run-on sentence. And then just plug that in as is. And that's a fantastic password. And that's actually where the new guidance has gone. Now, it's funny, and I don't mean to rip on UT, but we have some pretty draconian password rules for like our EID and our UT Direct logins and stuff. And they're old school rules. When I went back in, at least recently, to try and switch mine, because I had one of these monstrosity passwords I can't remember because it's got to have all these different seven rule checklist filled before I can use it, I was going to go back in and put in one of these long random phrases, and it didn't let me do it because it says that's not a good password because it doesn't have all these special characters. That's not the guidance now. The state-of-the-art guidance is long and simple, something that you can remember in your head and that's just as long and random as you can possibly make it. So that's the best kind of password today. Unfortunately, the systems and the rules have not caught up with current best practice. Hopefully they will soon.
Cool. You sort of touched on it a bit earlier when you started talking about passwords and the old guidelines, but do we really need to have multiple passwords anymore?
So that's a really good question following up from that. And I would say that that's still one of the old school rules that I would recommend for two reasons. One is, if you have even the best password in the world, if you have it for every single system that you use, makes it really easy to log into stuff. But if, for whatever reason, that password gets compromised, then all of your systems are vulnerable. It's a single point of failure. Now, using the old rules, if you came up with a really good one, you wouldn't want to have to do that over and over and over again. So you might use that, and I could see that. But now, given long and random, I think it's easier now to come up with different passwords. The other reason that we should all be using different passwords for different services and stuff is because of the availability of password managers. Password managers are, again, one of the single greatest tools you can use to protect your security. And I kind of jotted down a list. I didn't want to call any particular vendor out over another. And there's lists of top 10s you can find. But, you know, I found LastPass, Dashlane, TrueKey, Keeper, KeePass, 1Password, all of these. And you can just Google top password managers. All of these have pretty good reputations. And what it allows you to do is they allow you to safely store a bunch of different passwords, and even they'll help you create it. Some of them are really plugged in. You can get web extensions and stuff, so you can automatically just auto-populate it into forms and different websites, and it will really help you keep track of all of these different passwords. So there's no excuse really to not have multiple passwords for multiple sites. The caveat with these things is if you've got a password manager that has all your passwords in it, you want to choose a really, really good password to access that password manager. Because if someone gets into that, they've got all your passwords. So it's the same kind of chicken and egg question. And I've seen people that, you know, and it's very easy to do with this with them, but people will get a password manager. They'll use a simple password to get into it because that's the one they've got to remember. And then they'll configure it so that it always remembers that password and auto-populates their user credentials into every website they go to. So essentially, I don't know how much good it's really doing you other than giving you sort of a false sense of security, because it's a great tool that you haven't protected very well. So be smart about using it. But those are really, really good tools to help you keep track of all of these different passwords. And most of them aren't just passwords. You can put a bunch of different information in there. Credit card information, software licenses. It becomes sort of a one-stop shop locker for all of your sort of digital secrets and digital information. Again, though, that being that everything's in this one place, that tends to make it a target for attack in and of itself. So you got to balance that. But they're very, very good tools.
We've sort of touched on it in the past couple of segments, but because it's fairly contemporary, I was wondering if you had any further thoughts on the Equifax attack or other similarly contemporary.
So I think that, yeah, and just to kind of tie it all together, because Equifax is a really good example of, you know, passwords are essentially an authentication mechanism. They're associated with identity. Security and privacy are obviously security and privacy. The Equifax hack sort of brings all of these things together. And you know, a lot of times when organizations get hacked, I'm often kind of reticent to, I know how hard security is to do, so I don't want to get in there and beat anybody up. Equifax deserves to get beaten up. It's like Fort Knox leaving the front door unlocked and someone walks away with all the goods. It's like, dude, you had one job. You know, your job was to store in a protected way the most sensitive financial data of most of the people in this country. There is absolutely no excuse, especially given the excuses that have come out. No, that's just the latest and worst one. I mean, and now we seem to be in this kind of phase of everyone is just, oh, it's just more terrible than the last one. I mean, you go back and look at the Yahoo hack and everybody was like, oh my God, this is horrible. It's the biggest thing in the world. And then Equifax comes along. Yahoo doesn't look like anything anymore. Although I did see that Melissa Myers apologized and blamed it on the Russians. So go M. But yeah, so, you know, I think that the Equifax attack should frighten us. There are people that are going to have their lives ruined, more or less temporarily, in some cases, maybe even permanently, because of what happened with Equifax. I mean, people, and I'm not, they are going to have their identities stolen, and people are going to do things with those identities that are going to give these people bad days that last for a long time through no fault of their own, not even through any of their own choice, because none of us have a choice about whether or not Equifax or the other data brokers or Google or Facebook or anybody else. And if you think about it, what's next? The next logical progression is it's not Equifax. The next logical progression is it's one of the big tech companies that has a breach like this. And suddenly I find out that, you know, And I don't want to call any of them out, but there's only four or five of them. So think about what happens when the one that you use the most suddenly realizes that everything they've got on every customer they have has been stolen and is now in the hands of who knows who. And I don't know what's going to get done about it. The industry is hard. They've got armies of lobbyists to keep regulation light. But another really good one, you know, you talk about it, and I don't think it was the next phase, but one that got really, really interesting and got some interesting airtime was what happened at Twitter when the contractor, they say he's a contractor, I guess now, but the ex-employee that shut down Donald Trump's Twitter account on his way out the door. Think about that. Think about how President Trump uses his Twitter account, whether or not it's an extension of American foreign policy, and then think about a company where some dude potentially has enough access to just turn it off. If he could turn it off, what else could he have done with it if he had wanted to? Could he have tweeted out the missiles are flying? I mean, who knows? You know, and you look at, you know, a lot of the tech companies are having incidents like this. If you remember, Uber had the scandal over God mode, where, you know, apparently they had a mode in there that could track anybody that had the app. And apparently just about anybody in the company could get into this God mode and track whoever. And they had people tracking girlfriends and everything else. That's crazy. And again, it sort of ties together with this privacy security thing. We entrust so much of our data to forces and agencies and organizations beyond our control that don't even give us a choice about whether or not we entrust this data to them. And I'm not optimistic about how well they're using or protecting it. So I would say, going back down, short of calling up your congressman and saying, hey, I want something done about this, becoming an activist, you know, becoming a scholar that talks about it. And I recommend all those things. Do it. If you're into that, go for it. But really, for most of us living our day-to-day lives, the best that we can do is make sure that everything that we have power and control over, we're exercising that power and control. Because it's not futile. We can do a lot locally. And that's really all we can do right now. And so to not even do that, then we're just asking for it. And we deserve what we get.
On that note, thank you for joining us. I'm certain you've given all of our listeners a lot to reflect on and some good points of action. So I wanted to thank you for being here.
I'm going to close it out with something a little less negative than we deserve what we get. I have been doing this for a long time. Everybody can make a difference. I mean, that's the whole thing. When I say we deserve what we get, it's because we do have the power to affect it. You do have the power to protect yourself. And like anything else, if you don't engage with that and if you don't take that responsibility seriously and do something about it, then you're wasting an opportunity because you do have that opportunity to do it. And I want everybody to do it. Better?
Better.
Awesome.
On that note, as the last thing before we close out the series, is there anything of yours, like a class or something like that, that you'd want to plug to our iSchool listeners?
Oh, I hate plugging my stuff, but I guess I'm supposed to on stuff like this. So yeah, I teach two classes at the iSchool these days. Both are graduate level classes, but there are some undergraduates that can come in as well. And one is on information security. I usually teach that one in the spring. And then in the fall, I'm in the middle of it right now, I teach one on the intelligence community. And so, yeah, if you're interested in either of those topics, you don't need to be technical. You don't need to have any sort of background or knowledge in any of it. There are sort of survey courses that can help you sort of dive into these topics. So if that floats your boat, come on board. We'd love to have you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks again to Lance Hayden for a very insightful series. It's given me a lot to think about, and I encourage listeners to share it with friends and family.
With that, thank you for listening to the iSchool Weekly Update. This is our last episode of the fall 2017 semester. We hope everybody has a mostly worry-free end of the semester and that the winter break is full of rest and relaxation. For those graduating, congratulations! Best of luck with all your future endeavors.
The iSchool Weekly Update is produced and hosted by Rodrigo Leal and me. Our correspondent for this week was Elizabeth Fletcher. Music for each show is written and performed by me. Artwork for our show was created by Rodrigo. Special thanks to Quinn Stewart, Sam Burns, our fellow co-workers here at the IT Lab, and of course, our guest for the week, the unparalleled Lance Hayden. Each episode of the iSchool Weekly Update is produced at 1616 Guadalupe Street here in the IT Lab studios. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and on the iSchool info portal. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please email us at iSchoolWeeklyUpdate@gmail.com. As always, I'm Kate Golden.
And my name is Rodrigo Leal, and we'll catch you up in 2018.